Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 271. And we are pleased to have on Austin Lewis, the head boys basketball coach at Sidney High School, the Red Raiders out in the panhandle of Nebraska. Coach Lewis has a really solid program going on out there, and excited to have him on the podcast this week. But as always, before we get to Coach Lewis, we want to talk about our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Cosac Chiropractic. Check out their practice, KOSACHIRO.com. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, Spotify, iTunes, whatever it may be, first of all, subscribe. Second, download, rate, review. That's actually 2, 3, and 4. Check it out. Do all those things. When you do that stuff, we move up in the rankings. When people look up basketball coaching podcasts, it helps us in the rankings. I don't know how it works. I'm just a history teacher who talks into a microphone a couple hours a week. But be sure to do that as well. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Enough of the formalities. We are excited to have on Mr. Austin Lewis, head boys basketball coach at Sidney High School, Sidney, Nebraska. Coach Lewis, how are you doing this fine? I think it's a Thursday evening. How are you doing, Coach?
Doing really well. And hey, you know, you just mentioned, I think this is your 271st episode, and I just wanted to congratulate you, Marty, I remember when you kind of got this thing started a couple years ago, and I'm seeing this taking off for you, so I'm happy for you. And I looked at some of your podcasts and some of the names that you've had on, and to be honest with you, Van Gundy was one of them, and I'm thinking, why the hell does he want to talk to me?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. When I was talking with Stan, I was like, "Why is he talking to me?" I could tell you that, you know. No, Austin, I really, really appreciate it. It has been a labor of love. It has been a privilege and an honor to hopefully help out some people. And I've gotten a chance to talk to people that I never dreamed I would be able to talk to, if I played my cards right, hopefully there's a few more down the line here that I'll get a chance to talk to as well. So, greatly, greatly appreciate it, Coach. I really, really appreciate that. So thank you so much. So
absolutely. Happy for you. It's doing well.
Yeah. Well, hey, enough about a pen and a napkin. This is all about Austin Lewis for the next hour or so here. So let's dive into that. Let's kind of start this out the way that we normally do. Tell us a little bit about your basketball journey, how you ended up there in City, Nebraska, and then how you, how you fell in love with the game of basketball.
Well, honestly, the basketball thing came and probably came with my height. I'm 6'5". So what is everybody, what do they expect of you when you're a tall kid growing up? That's the first thing everybody asks is if you play basketball. And so, I did. We're from a small town, Culbertson, Nebraska. Population of 600 to 800 people, and it's Hitchcock County Schools now. And we lived out in the country, and there wasn't a ton to do then anyway. So we had a dirt driveway and a hoop, and that's what I did after school every day. And that got me interested. And we had some good teams that I looked up to in height from our high school back then. And there were state teams, and kind of lived and died like any kid would with their high school team. And
absolutely
going to state. And when they lose that last game, you're crying your eyes out. And, I went up through all that and went through our own school and went to Hastings College to play basketball. Played basketball there a couple of years and actually finished out doing track at Hastings College. And then pretty much got right into coaching. Before I was out of college, I was already helping out as an assistant at Donovan Trumbull under Zach Foster. So that was my first coaching gig. So I've known Zach for a long time. And after that, I ended up getting my first teaching job in Kansas. So we bounced around Kansas a little bit there. I was at Ulysses, Kansas, and then Smith Center, Kansas. Went down there for 4 years. At 24 years old, I wanted to be a head coach right away, and of course, like everybody, you're young and think you can change the world as a coach, and jumped into that and man, was there a lot to learn right off the bat when you're 24 and jump into a head coaching role that's wasn't exactly, you know, if we didn't have a ton of talent at the time. And we stayed there for about 4 years and learned a lot, got things going a little bit, and moved to Meade, Kansas, and had some good years there, made some state tournaments, and we were state runner up 1 year there. And after that, we ended up in Sydney, and we've been here ever since, my wife and kids. And we've been here for 9 years now, and this is pretty much we call it home, because Sydney's been really good to us, and great place for the kids to grow up. My daughter started kindergarten here, and she's going to be a freshman next year, so she'll be playing for Coach Shaw, your buddy Coach Shaw, and it's a good place for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get to that knucklehead T. Shaw, tell us a little bit, kind of one of our newer category, probably the newest category that we have in the department of we're making stuff up as we go along here. The Karen Self, a pen and a napkin moment. Austin, when do you remember the first time that you got out the pen and you started doodling, whether it's on paper or on a napkin or whatever, and you thought, hey, you know, this coaching thing might be for me?
You know, it probably was, you know, not with a pen and a napkin necessarily, but I do tell this story sitting when I just got into education, because I went to college, I started out as a business major, didn't know really, that's because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So I do remember distinctly talking to my mom on the phone and sitting in my dorm room my freshman year and just figuring out that, you know, sitting through probably a freshman accounting class and like, this is not for me. And but I talked to my mom, like, what do you want to do? Like, the only thing I could think of that at that moment, what I really, really cared about was sports and athletics. And, you know, like any 18-year-old, what's a way to stay around that? Well, you get into education and you get into coaching. And I guess that from there, I honestly picked my favorite subject, which is history. And that's the way I went, is history education, and got into coaching. Like I said, it was coaching even before I was out of college, helping out as an assistant at Donovan. But that was kind of the moment, you're trying to figure out what it is you're going to do for forever, you know, or what you want to do forever, what you're actually going to be interested in, have a job that you like. And all I could think of was being around athletics. So that's kind of how it happened, honestly. And I kind of remember that pretty distinctly, sitting in my dorm room that night and kind of figuring that out. So that was the time.
It was probably all about the finances, I really think, is what it was, Austin, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you get into coaching, it's definitely going to be about the money, especially at the high school level. So, that was it. You know, my parents were in education, so I don't have the pedigree of coaches. Some coaches, like, you know, they have in their family, the lineage with their dads and things like that. And my dad runs a motorcycle shop. He sells ATVs and that kind of stuff. So they're the furthest thing from education. So it was kind of unique for me to get into it. And now it's been about 20 years later. So it's been a good journey.
Yeah. But there's got to be some things that you've taken from your father. I mean, like the, you know, obviously if you're repairing vehicles and engines and things like that, I mean, you're talking about the details and one step at a time and the process. I'm sure some of that has had to have rubbed off on you over the years, right?
I would say, if anything, the most for my dad would be the work ethic. With coaching, it's just especially during the season, it's a nonstop thing. And you're thinking about it all the time, and then you're working all the time. And then even in the off season, it's becoming more and more, you just got to be busy with it. Otherwise, you're going to fall behind. And my dad, he's been in that and had that business in McCook, Nebraska for over 40 years now. And he's always said he's a 6 day a week guy. So, you know, he's in his 60s now and he's still a 6 day a week guy. So he's always worked extremely hard. Anybody that runs a business as an entrepreneur knows, you know, how hard that is, and especially to stay with it that long and be successful and stuff. So I'd say anything I've gotten from my dad, it's just the work ethic, staying with something, you know, pushing through and that kind of stuff, because he's, he's done it, man. He's done really well for himself too. So for our family. So that's probably it right there.
Yeah. So you had referenced one of your coworkers, a mutual friend of ours, Mr. Shaw, and you and I both know he's kind of a Yahoo, but in all seriousness, how it's hard not to get along with Tyler, and how much easier does it make it for you as a head coach, especially like with a, you know, boys coach, girls coach, to have somebody that is, it's easy to cooperate with them. It's easy to compromise. It's easy to work together as you're working through the intensity of a season, a long season in the dead of winter.
Well, if you know Coach Shaw, Coach Shaw's a people person. Yeah. And he can talk to anybody. It's probably one of his gifts, and really, you know, his gifts for being a good coach is the ability to communicate with people, get along with people, you know, as much as coaching is, you know, being commanding of your team and stuff. It's figuring out how to get people to work together, you know, and that's a big part of it. And I think that's something that Tyler thrives at. So, I mean, working with him, I think we've probably learned a lot from each other, to be honest with you. He's a little bit older than me. He's in his mid-40s. I'm in my early 40s. But coming here and I've watched his programs through the years and just how he develops it. You know, if you watch Coach Shaw's team, he's a platoon subber. He plays a lot of girls. And Even on years when it's tough for him, he still makes it a point to do that. And I think it's shown, you know, through his programs, he's developed a lot of depth over the years. Through his programs, he keeps a lot of girls interested, a lot of kids interested. And, you know, that's something that you can do, you know, he's been in a situation where, he's got a lot of talent that coming through and girls that they're interested. And he's a big part of that. He keeps them interested too. But he's able to do that and keep building depth in his program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've probably become more prone to wanting to be more like that and do more, get more kids in when I can. We haven't been in the same situation, 9 years straight, like Coach Shaw has. We've had times where we just can't sub as much, you know what I mean? And it's just the reality that we live in. And some of that's even different from boys to girls basketball sometimes. But, you know, I think we've probably taken some things from each other's programs that we like. And, you know, I know Coach Shaw's taking down some of our inbounds plays or stuff like that, so it's a good working relationship. I've always gotten along with Coach really well. I think between the two of us and just staying in Sydney, you know, there's a lot of coaching turnover all over the place too. We've got a town that's pretty basketball happy right now. And it's a fun place to be if you love it.
Yeah. You guys made your own trip down to Lincoln this year. Lost a tough one to Concordia, who, you know, Ken's got a really, really nice program there in Northwest Omaha. What were some of the things that you learned from this year's team and on your journey down to the state tournament?
Well, as you know, the last couple of years, we've had really good football seasons. And our football team has been to the semifinals the last 2 years in a row. And we've got multi-sport athletes. They care about everything that they play. This year was, they really were pushing, and we all thought we had a real good chance to get to the state final there. And so a tough ending against Central City there in the semis for us. We had guys dinged up. When you go that deep, it's, you know, we kind of had to start the season a little bit different. You know, most coaches, including myself, you're pretty gung-ho when the season's going and you're ready to get, I mean, all guns ablaze and heading into your season. And I say, you know, just for us and almost all our guys were football players. Going into our season, I knew it was going to be just a little bit different at the start of that season and how some guys were dinged up. Just how we started the practice, I guess, was easing into it a little bit, I would say. Yeah. I was really worried early on just because basketball is a sport you can't drop games that you shouldn't early. I mean, that's where it hurts you in the power points later and everything. And we ended up going 8-0 to start the year, like through our holiday tournament, and had some big wins. We had a nice win over Cheyenne East, which is a Class A school, size school out of Cheyenne. Yuma, Colorado was a state champ in 2A the year before. We beat them. And so we really started the season actually better than I anticipated. And it kind of felt like it was January when we hit our wall.
Yeah.
January, we dropped a game. We dropped 4 out of 5 games there. The Lions, Sterling, Colorado, McCook. McCook was a really close competitive game, just a tough ending.
Yep.
We just had a lull there, and we, you know, so we had our issues in the middle of the year, and you know, that we had a lot of talent, so that kind of became a thing. And I don't know, it was rough kind of there in the middle, to be honest with you. And you're not sure how it's going or which direction it's going to go, and when guys and people are upset or the, you know, and things like that. So we just kind of stayed with it. Kept working with the guys, and you're hoping for that breakthrough. You know, when those things happen, you're just looking for that breakthrough. We find that important win again. And I guess with us, we had a couple there. We had a decent conference tournament. We made it to the finals of our conference tournament and lost to Scotts Bluff, who, as we found out, was really darn good as Class B runners up.
Yeah.
You know, still kind of had just that feeling. And we drove up to Shadron on a Friday night. I think it was February 14th on Friday night, and we dropped the game to Shadron by 7, and they had one of their seniors up there, went off for 31 points on us that night. And our reward for that was we were leaving Shadron that night to drive down in a couple of vans down to Grand Island to play in the Heartland Classic the next day. And then we got caught in a snowstorm on Highway 2, and it took us 6 hours to get to Grand Island.
Oh, geez.
Oh, it was a mess. We got there, checked into our hotel about 2 a.m., and we're playing. I think our game was around 1 o'clock or something the next day, so we had a little time to rest, but you know how that goes. Just turnover and kids and everything. And so at that point, I was just like, oh my gosh, this could be really bad. And I don't know. It's just something different that day. And I kind of felt it in the locker room before the game with the guys. If I don't, somewhere the motivation, and it just all showed up, and we beat Central Catholic. I think they were ranked number 1 in C2 at that time, and number 2 in power points. And that was just kind of a really feel good win, just on that stage at the Heartland Classic and stuff. And it really kind of just springboarded our season. And there's just all of a sudden just a ton of belief back, and we went to work again, and had some like you said, we play a tough schedule. We played Scotts Bluff twice. We played Ogallala twice, two of the best teams in their classes in the state. And those games only helped us, I think, heading to the end of the season, where we had to travel another 6-hour trip to Wayne, and we were able to win the district final there and head to state. So it was definitely a journey. I kind of discussed that on the way home with our coaches from the district final. For me, it was the 4th state tournament I've been to in 2 different states, but probably one of my most rewarding seasons just as a coach, just because of the, you know, mid-season there, you just didn't know which direction we were going, you know. And so to make the state tournament, it was just a big thing. And then we get down there, and you're right, Concordia was a heck of a team. Coached about as good as any team you see. I think Coach Coolis does a heck of a job with them. Intelligent. But we just busted our butt on scouting and had a really good game against them. And just, you know how it is. Couple plays at the end don't go your way. And that was it. But it was a very rewarding season overall. And we're glad to be down there.
Yeah. Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got 3 on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are three on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have three off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have two smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have two designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile, mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. Three coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. What's it like for you guys? I know you're in a unique situation geographically, like Tyler and I have had the conversation, you know, when you're in the Omaha area, you schedule the same teams out of convenience. You guys schedule the same teams out of necessity because of the lack of population. You know, it's just simple geography. But you guys are also in a unique situation because, you know, Scotts Bluff knows they're going to be in Class B, or Gehring knows they're going to be in Class B or whatever. But you guys are not only kind of, you know, out in this area where it's not densely populated, but also you're constantly bouncing back and forth between C1 and Class B. And so for people that don't know Nebraska, that's between the second and the third biggest classes here in the state. So, you know, how does that affect anything, Austin? Do you just kind of do what you're going to do and you just let the chips fall where they may, or do you think about that stuff as you go through your preparations going into each season?
We do, and with our scheduling too. I mean, we had our boys were Class C1 this year. We played, I believe, 10 games on our schedule were Class B, and then we played ended up playing three Class A because we played North Platte twice, and we played Cheyenne East. Mm-hmm. And so there, you know, you got to look at it in a way, and it's kind of exactly what happened this season. You know, I was worried about from last year. Last year, our schedule is a little bit lighter. We were 21-2 heading into district final, and we were a 4 seed. And when we got upset by Malcolm, and they were a good team. They had a nice year, everything. But we after that game, I just didn't feel like we probably had been quite battle tested enough. So making our schedule head into the next year here, you know, we beefed it up a little bit, and we added that Heartland Classic game with GICC. We added Cheyenne East to our schedule. Like I said, the Class A out of type school out of Cheyenne there, and just kind of beefed up our schedule a little bit to be a little bit tougher. And you know, some of the schools would like to play us more. Sometimes Scotts Bluff would like to play us more. We're going to average playing Scotts Bluff twice a year because we play them in the regular season. We'll see them in our conference tournament a lot too. So I usually don't schedule them for home and home because I know we're going to see them. And then some years your Class B, you'll see them in districts too. So, that was one worry I had. I remember saying that is I hope I didn't beef up our schedule too much because Class One and our boys last couple of years has been such a grinder. Last year there was 13 teams in Class C1 boys that were 20 plus wins, and only seven of them made the state tournament. So there was six teams that were 20 plus wins, and we were one of them that were sitting home at state tournament. It's like, gosh, those are the years you got to get down there, you know. So I was just thinking, I hope I didn't make our schedule too tough that we're going to be, you know, too low of a seed, or we could end up having a horrible matchup off a low seed for a district final or something like that. And so, but, you know, in hindsight, I guess I hope it worked out for the best. We had some lumps along the way. We were tested. We were challenged. It really challenged our mettle a little bit. And like I said, it probably helped us on a pretty tough trip. You had a 400-mile drive up to Wayne in a packed house there to get, and you know, Wayne, they've got some basketball tradition. They care about their programs. So that was not an easy place to go play. So to come out of there with a win was pretty exciting thing, and a big thing for our program. But yeah, I mean, it is the schedule. You bounce back and forth. I guess it's a philosophy. You're losing isn't fun when you're in the middle of it, but you're hoping it help you to the end of the season. And I would say this year in our case, it probably did.
Mm-hmm. So you're in a, you know, not a unique situation, but it's a situation. You're the athletic director there at Sydney. So you're not a teacher. You're not managing math, science, or whatever. You're overseeing a bunch of other coaches while you are a head coach yourself. As you watch your coaches in various different sports, and some of them are individualized like a wrestling or a tennis or whatever, and some of them are obviously team sports, but what are some of the best things that you've picked up on from your coaches that you are in charge of, their coach, that you're like, oh man, I really like the way that, you know, Coach Blank does this with their program, and I'm going to try and integrate this or adapt it to our boys' basketball program or whatever it may be?
Honestly, I would say, you know, the best, being an activities director, it's in ways, it's just like coaching. What's your goal? You want to get everybody on the same page in your athletic department. You want to get everybody rowing in the same direction. And so we've worked really hard at getting that and getting our athletics, especially with our weight training and everything, all on the same page where we're all, you know, I think it's really important the boys' side, football and basketball coach gets along. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that the volleyball coach and the girls' basketball coach just get along and believe in each other's activities. And really that those sports can enhance the sport that you coach, you know what I mean? And we're a small school. We share athletes. We don't have one sport athletes in our school. I mean, we do, but we're mostly multi-sport athletes across the board. And just having that ability where your coaches believe in each other's programs and stuff. And I think we're in a really good spot for that right now in Sydney. Like I said, I get along really well. Ryan Smith, our football coach, he's a heck of a guy. He's been in coaching for 25, 30 years. He's done a great job, and probably with like him and Coach Shaw, you know, those guys are veteran coaches, and there's always leadership things that you see with coaches that you like, or, you know, you learn along the way with them. I'm a big guy on leadership and how that too. And I just think those guys do a really good job with what they do and how they, approach their team and take care of kids. And because it's an art to keep kids, it really is an art to keep kids invested in your program. Mm-hmm. You got the top ones and the lowest ones and all around, and keep wanting to come back and just maintain all that. I've always said, when you're coaching in the middle of the season, you're carrying a 1,000-pound boulder on your back from parents and administrators and the kids and the assistant coaches and everything, and you just carry that weight all the time. So it takes a special person to do it. So I would say that. I mean, it's really I know it sounds corny. It's a brotherhood, though. The people that are in it with you. You know, you're a coach. They're people you can talk to, bounce things off of, and just have real conversations with, because they get it. They've been part of it, you know. So I really, really enjoy my job in that aspect, and getting to just work around and work with high caliber coaches and high caliber people, because I'll take it all the way to the grave. It takes a special person to be a coach. So mm-hmm. it's a fun part of the job.
There's only a small percentage of people that you can have those real conversations, and they know the emotions and feelings that you're going through, and they reciprocate that with you. Like, yeah, I get it. Yeah, I know exactly what you're feeling. It is a brotherhood and an understanding. And I think, you know, one of the things, Austin, that I figured out as I became more seasoned and experienced, of course, we don't use the O word here at A Pen and a Napkin, but, you know, we all have our cross to bear, so to speak. We all have our stuff that every program is dealing with. And a lot of times we think, well, that team is winning 20 games. Boy, that coach is just on easy street. And sometimes those 20 win seasons can be some of the more difficult seasons that you can coach, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, winning doesn't solve all problems.
Yeah.
Which we know that. With winning, sometimes comes a whole new set of problems. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, because everybody wants to be part of a successful program, you know? So it's a different set of problems, different things and things that can be issues. Like I said, you take that on, you've been part of both. I mean, I've seen both sides of it, most definitely. Even at Sydney, you know, last 4 or 5 years, we've been very good. We've won, I don't know, 80, 90 basketball games in the last 4 or 5 years. But you know, 5, 6 years ago, we won 3 games. Yeah. So we've seen both sides of it. And it's, I've been lucky enough to keep some coaches. And, you know, one of my assistants, Sean Dillay, he's been with me the whole way. And he's really, he's been at Sydney way longer than I have. Even actually is just a heck of a guy to be around, basketball mind, things like that. So it's, you know, those are the guys that, and we say that, we've discussed that many times. Half the fun of coaching and being is the guys you get to be around. You know, there's going to be good seasons. There's going to be really tough seasons sometimes. And, you know, I've got some really good memories just with staffs from when we had some tough seasons. Even so, some of those guys, you get your group texts with some of those guys that are gone now that moved on to other jobs and stuff. And they're still, you know, we had some tough seasons, and they still had a good experience from it and keep in touch. So that's always a positive.
Yeah. Coach, let's talk about the upcoming, you know, what I call improvement season, you know, the spring and the summer and the fall. As you're getting ready for the summer here, June, you know, mainly June for us here in Nebraska, what are some things that you're looking at for Coach Lewis here? What are one or two things that you really want to invest in yourself and make yourself better for your kids and your parents, so that you can have the best, you know, June and July that you possibly can with your program?
Well, you know, I already talked to the kids about it in our exit meeting we had, was just mentioned we need to keep putting time into skills this summer. Probably, you know, it's important. You got to go play the games in the summer. And we're like anybody. Our kids are so busy. Like, we've got baseball. They've got all kinds of camps. And so you just don't get them as much as you'd like them. But you try and encourage them to continue with the skill development. And if they really put that time in, how much of a jump they really can make. You know, an example I brought up to him, he's been a good player for Holdridge over the last few years, but the Johnson kid at Holdridge that has made such a jump this year, and like all of a sudden they're a contender. And, you know, they'd been pretty decent, but they hadn't been a C1 contender and state tournament type looking team until this year. And all of a sudden he's like one of, if not the best player in class C1, offensive player in C1. And every year it seems like there's a kid or somebody on a team that just all of a sudden they just show up out of nowhere, you know, like, oh geez, where did they come from? Where'd this come from? And so I just, you know, I try and encourage our kids. It's like, hey, you know, put up 20,000-30,000 shots this summer. Why can't that be you? You know, why can't that be us? Why can't that be you? Why can't, you know, and just kind of give them that thought process is like, you know, that's what it takes. And where you gain your confidence is just flat out from putting in the time and putting in the work and everything like that. So, but I've also been, you know, I've always been a big clinic guy. It's that part of it for me. I've neglected probably a little bit since I became her athletic director, just because of time constraints a little bit, being a lot more busy as an AED too. But I usually still try and make the Nebraska Coaches Association clinic and squeezing clinics wherever I can. And I'm a lifelong learner of basketball. I'll go listen to anybody. That's what I've always thought. Even you go to clinics, and if you can, I mean, if I leave a clinic and I wrote down like two things, it was worth it. You know, it's definitely worth it. It's just to get something out of it along the way. And you can always pick something up from somebody. So, I guess for improvements for us, that's kind of thoughts going into the off season for us, is just the, where we need to keep putting a little bit of time in it. I have full confidence that I'll line up enough good competition for us to see this summer to challenge us. And so we start, you know, understanding what new guys in the new spots, their roles are and everything. I mean, that's half of what summer is really with the games and stuff, is figuring out, like, we know who we got, but how they play together.
And
who's going to do what, and just how those roles are going to be, and the substitutions, and how it's all going to work is kind of what you start picking up on in the summertime, I guess. And but yeah, just keep putting in the work. And, you know, we got a lot of guys that do track and golf even and stuff like that. So I kind of left them alone right now in the spring, to be honest with you. And there's a couple of them that'll probably get into some club team stuff. But it's good to see them competing in other sports too, and just pushing that belt all around.
Well, funny, I know of a clinic that is here in Omaha in April 12th, you know, so if you want to grab T. Shaw and hop in for 5 hours or so east, you know, there's a pretty quality deal going on here. But just again, throying it out there. Just
is he coming down?
You know, I think you should make that a clause in his contract.
He'll be in his extra duty contract for the next year.
Perfect.
You know what? It sounds like a great plan. You know this, and here's my other job, the AD part that comes in. We got prom that night.
Oh yes, I did some prom chaperoning a couple of weeks ago as well. So
that's fun.
Yeah. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Coach, let's talk a little John Wooden. How's that sound? Okay. We're going to pull out our John Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. Coach Austin Lewis, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Yeah.
All right.
John.
Page 36 is where our quote comes from. It is, "Happiness is in many things. It's in love. It's in sharing. But most of all, It's being at peace with yourself, knowing that you are making the effort, the full effort, to do what is right. True happiness comes from the things that cannot be taken away from you. Making the full effort to do the right thing can never be taken away from you. That wooden guy had it together.
Yeah, is that one? Is that from Lifetime of Observations?
Yes.
Wooden book.
Yep. Yep.
That was the first wooden book I ever read. That was the one, and that was I think that was a gift to me from my high school graduation from someone. I read that the summer after graduation, and that was. That was kind of probably one of those moments you think of like turning points towards coaching too, right there. But yeah, that's classic Wooden about just the reaching your full potential, right? Of the kind of just what we were talking about. The not every season is going to be the state championship or state season and stuff. Can you bring those kids from point A to point B and bring them around better than they were? And that's one thing I always look at from a season that. Is did we win that one game that we probably shouldn't have? One that you try and get every single year. It's like, did we win it? Did we get one in there that we probably shouldn't have won? Like we upset somebody along the way there. And that to me, I mean, even if that's in a 5-win season, if you kind of beat somebody, at least they're better than us. We beat them. I thought that's getting the job done. You know what I mean? You're reaching that potential, and that's straight Wooden stuff right there.
Yeah, that or. Kind of in the same vein, but differently, did you not lose any games to teams that you should have not lost to? We had 12 win talent, but we won all 12 games that we should have won. We didn't go 8-14. We went 12-10 because we won in the 10 games that we lost, those 10 teams are probably better than us more often than not, but we won the 12 games that we should have won. And I think that's another way that you can, what I used to say, Austin, is, are we going to max out? Are we going to, if we're a 12 win team, are we going to win 12 games? If we're a 20 win team, are we going to win 20 games? You know, and that when you're talking about the tangibles, the winning and the losing, that's often how I tried to grade my teams out at the end of the season. Are you kind of the same way or are you different?
Yeah. Well, do you do the, I mean, this was wasn't this a Wooden thing? Do you write down the games you think you should win before the season and kind of map that out, what you think you should be? Do you do that?
I have done more of the, I think, this team should win 14 games, or I think this team should win 17 games, but I've never kind of gone down the schedule and said, I shouldn't say that. I probably have. I don't really recall, formally saying, I think we'll be 14-8 or whatever that may be. So,
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just was curious. It's something I kind of do is, it's hard to tell. You can look at your schedule, if there's a game that's good, probably a 50-50 game out there too. And you're hoping you steal one along the way and you don't get upset on one that could be a tough road game, a trap game on the road after a conference tournament or something like that, anything like that. So you just kind of map it out and have a, I think we could be, you have it in your mind at least, this is where you could be at the end of the season and where we should be at. And you kind of judge yourself. And really, I probably judge us a little harder. Like I said, there's 50-50 games. If I think it's a 50-50, I'll probably count it as a loss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we might not get that one. It's a 50-50, And so if you can surpass that, you're being a little harder on yourself maybe than you should. If you can surpass that, meet that or surpass it, like you said, it's always a plus. There's, it was after our 3-win season that was five, six years ago, somewhere in there. The next year, I knew we had some young guys coming, but we weren't going to be just super competitive right away.
Yeah,
I had in my head going into that season. I think it was 2021, 2020. It was one of those. I kind of had in my head that after that season, I was like, I think we could get maybe the 7 or 8 wins. And I mean, that's great. You double your win total from the year before, you're moving in the right direction. And I'm thinking that, and, we just had some good things happen that year, and some kids grew up a little faster, and some underclassmen played good. And all of a sudden, we finished the year and we were 12-12, we were 500. And we actually, in a sub-district that year, we upset Scotts Bluff in our sub-district that year. And that was one of the big ones at the end of the year. And it's just like, holy cow, this just went from really tough times to we just beat, you know, one of the premier teams that's a premier Class B team out here in Western Nebraska pretty much every year and beat them in sub-districts. And so that was one that's like, geez, yeah, we not only met but surpassed what we thought our expectations could be for the season. And there's, like I said, that was a 500 season for us.
Yeah.
And what a great, great feeling at the end of the year after a 500 season. You know what I mean? Just because to the kids too, they kind of knew it too. It was like, geez, it was better than we thought it could have been even, you know?
Yeah. Well, did you kind of feel like Ron Burgundy, you know, after the anchor fight where you're like, well, that escalated quickly, you know?
That escalated very quickly. It was like, it's some success there. And it was great. So yeah, it's just another example of it doesn't have to be a 20 win season to be a success. And that was for our program. That was a year. And I think our seniors that we had that year, it was a memorable year for them as well. Just yeah. Start pulling us out of a tough spot. So,
You know, you didn't go to your coaching staff is like, you know, I've been meaning to talk to you about this. Rick, I'm pretty sure that you killed a man. You might want to find a safe house or a relative to live with for a while, because I'm pretty sure you're wanted for murder.
Killed that guy. Yeah.
I think I killed a man. Yeah. great stuff. All right, let's get back. This could go in a wrong direction very quickly, so let's get back to basketball. let's talk some of Coach Lewis's favorite drills. What are some of the stuff? Well, what's some of the stuff here? I'm gonna let you cook here, Coach. What's some of the some of your favorite drills that you like to do in practice? It can just be kind of, you know, anything. If you're stuck on a desert island, let's phrase it like this. If you're stuck on a desert island and you can only run 5 drills, what are they going to be?
Oh, man, one of them would have to be we call it UCLA. It's a short-sighted drill. It's continuous 3-on-3. Well, it's 3-on-3, 3-on-2 that turns into 3-on-3 back and forth continuous. And it's just decision making. We added a press factor to it, so the team that either just scored or you know, the team that was just on offense, they're pressing the half court, and then there's another 3 waiting on the other side after they pass half court to play the half court defense, and it's just back and forth. That's just a chaotic drill, and it's a fast drill. And you talk about full court drills and kids that just learn, they got to learn how to play basketball and make decisions. That's about as good as it gets, because there's a press factor, there's a half court factor, defense and offense. And it's just, you know, you put 6 or 7 minutes on there, and it's just chaos. They play as hard as they can for 6 or 7 minutes straight there, and it gets really competitive. We do that at least a couple times a week. And that would have to be one of them for sure. Uh-huh. Just because it's the most basketball realistic drill that you can do, and effort wise and everything like that. I guess other ones probably would be, I'm big with shooting drills. We try and get a lot of shooting in. We do a drill. Gosh, we do a ton of shooting drills. We do one we call read the closeout. Basically, you're in the three guard spots, the wings and the point, and you've got a guy that starts under the basket with the ball. And he just pitches the ball to the wing. He's closing out hard to him. The guy in the wing has got to read the closeout. If it's a slow, weak closeout, he can take the shot. And if it's a, you know, if he gives him baseline or he gives him middle, you're attacking. And then they got to go finish. And then the guy that just played defense refills his spot. The guy that played offense, now he's pitching the ball back to the guy at the point, and they're going one-on-one. And then after they play, then it's just, and you just keep rotating guys through there. And I have no idea if that somebody probably runs a variation like that, but I think we made that drill when we just needed to work on strong takes to the basket and reading the closeout and making quick decisions. That's a good one for us. It's kind of a one-on-one and shooting drill. I've got some different ones. We've got one that's J series. That's clear back from Zach Foster at Donovan. When he's at Donovan, I'm sure he uses it still. And that's, if you got your slot on the top in the corner, you basically you're shooting threes from each spot, but it's contested threes. The guys, there's always a runner at you, and then you let them do a flyby and take a side dribble. So you're a pull up after a flyby, guys flying at you, and you've got a dribble drive kick out. So we try to incorporate as much shooting in as we can. Full court drills are always important. I probably do more full court drills, a ton of that all year long, but and then later in the year start focusing on more half court stuff because just a game gets a lot more controlled at the end of the year. It's much more controlled game when you're trying to fight for a district title and get down to state stuff. It's much more controlled than half court, and teams that are down there, if you're they didn't make it down there because they turn the ball over because you throw a press at them most of the time, right? They're down there because they don't turn the ball over. So it's a lot more half court stuff that you're focusing on and details with that. But yeah, I mean, that would be tough if you're on a desert island and take only a few drills or something. You're like, man, that would be tough because we do a lot of variations of stuff, and a lot of it I just steal from other people. Like I said, go to clinics and steal it from guys like you. So,
well, when I was coaching, I on my what I call rough draft sheet, I had desert island drill, and every day we would do one or two what I call desert island drills, basically kind of that same scenario. If the basketball gods put you on a desert island and you could only run five drills for the rest of your career, what five drills would you run? And I sometimes we get, the reason why I like talking about it is, we get fascinated by drills and drills and drills, and there's a million great drills out there, but sometimes we spend so much time going, that's a great drill, we should use that. That's a great drill, we should use that. That we forget, hey, what are just the core tenets that we need to do? And let's let our kids perfect a drill, if you will, and really understand how it functions rather than throwing 10 new drills at them every week. They're great drills. They are. But it does you no good if all you're doing is explaining drills all the time just because you feel like you need to run a different drill, So that's kind of where the concept came from.
Absolutely. Like, what your team wants to be? And probably that's why I would choose that UCLA as my number one, because it's just such an aggressive drill. I'm a defensive minded first coach. It's so important. And we all know defense will create offense for you. And you got to be able to go down there and run things offensively. Just having a team consistently every year that will just get out there and play defense and intelligent defense and be able to do what you do, it's so important. And that drill, it's the epitome of just effort all the time. So if that's what you're trying to instill in your program, that's what you want to be, that's what your what your program believes in, then that's gonna be your number one right there. Is something where it's an effort drill, and it's basketball incorporated, offense and defense, but there's a lot of defensive principles because it's a press and half court defense that's incorporated in the same drill. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yep. Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, a pen and a napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career, from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done. And we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Coach, let's talk, speaking of defense, let's talk about your defensive philosophy. What do you guys like to do out there in Sydney? You know, are you changing up year to year? Are you basically the same thing? How do you build that defense in on a year-to-year basis? You know, just, yeah, let's just talk about some defense here.
We're primarily a man team. I mean, we play man. Really, for me, like I said, small town high school, I was a growing up, I was a zone kid, small town class D basketball. You're playing a lot of zone. A lot of those do, you know, but, we pretty much my coaching career, my teams have been man. There's been years where we've probably played a little bit more zone. Primarily, I just think for the most part, I think, and maybe it's different from class to class. And then you get some teams sometimes that they'll just have the tools to run a great 1-3-1, or it's like a Wahoo, you know, type thing. And it's what the program sold out to. But for the most part, you see, like, you get teams that get down there and you got to be able to play good man defense a lot of the time. We will go situational zone. We run anybody that watches film though that we run a 1-2-2 that we like, we call, when we want to go zone, defend the 3-point line pretty well. That's probably a zone that we've gone to a lot. We tried some other things along the way, but it's never been, I guess in my years at Sydney, it's never been a thing where we've sold out to zone, because it always, about the time we think we start liking some zone stuff, something leads us back to the team is 10 threes on us or something. And it leads us back to man, you know? And we just do a lot with it. We've changed a lot. One thing that we've done, again, I'm not giving up too much because anybody that watches film would know we're a switching team. We switch pretty much everything with ball screens, DHOs. We switch everything. And really my main reason for starting to do that was, in my opinion, I don't think in high school level we play that they utilize bigs that well anymore. There's not just bigs that are great.
The traditional big.
Yeah, with you traditional big, they're really good with a pick and roll. We play a lot of teams that run pick and roll stuff, and there's some of those that we played before, and you know they run pick and roll offenses, and they never really even look at their role man. And so I guess my fear was, gosh, we're going to get switched. We're going to switch the big on a small. How are we going to defend that? And it's like, well, let's switch it and see if they actually hurt us with it. And then we teach our guards to fight those bigs off the block like maniacs. Like, and that's you ask any of our guys, they know, like, you better be a dog. You're going to have to fight. You're going to get switched onto a big. He's going to try and post you up, and you're just battling him to keep him, you know, outside of 8 feet. Mm-hmm. Try and keep him outside of 8 feet away from that rim, because that's where he's going to hurt you at if he catches there. And it's done pretty well. We have run into games where you know, we have to change that stout a little bit because there is, you know, case in point, Concordia this year at state, the Thrasher kid, he's a pretty good big, you know, 6'4", and he's just tough in there, and they know how to find him too. And we had to change how we defended that a little bit. And we were not switching as much when we went there down to the state tournament, and just, and they set up their offense with the stagger screen off of the block every single time too. And how that stagger screen was setting up with some of their shooters, we were not able to switch that. We were tagging them around that screen every single time and just trying not to get a switch on Thrasher, because we knew they'd be smart enough. If we switched that, they're just going to hit him and he's going to score on one of our guards. So that's just the, you know, it changes. We switch a lot of stuff, and we're primarily a man team, and we don't give up. I don't, you know, some teams will say they'll give up baseline, give up middle. I am a head up, defend your man coach, like close out square. Don't give up anything, I guess. And Coach Dill Hayes, my assistant for several years, he's that kind of his point term that he coined, guard your yard. Where, guys, this is one of those games, they've got five scorers on the floor.
Yep.
There's no place that we can help very much. Everybody's got to guard their yard today. You can't push them any direction. You're going to have great closeouts. You're going to have to stay down. You can't be late. That's what's going to hurt you, you know. There's those games where you're an end to those. They got five scorers out there. Guard your yard. There's no help. There's no guy that can lay off. So, yeah, that kind of gives you a little thought into our defense and our philosophy, I guess. And the rest of it is just pushing. Can't make mistakes. D3 defenders.
Well, I think one of the key things that you said, Coach, was, you know, not bringing help if you don't have to. I mean, a lot of teams have evolved into, let's get two on the ball and then swing, and let's make a play. And the more you can, as you say, guard your yard or, you know, close out really, really well. I think regardless of what defense you run, and I'll be curious to hear your answer to the question I got for you, but closeouts are so, no matter what you do, you've got to be a great closeout team. Are you guys working a lot on closeouts in practice? If so, how long, and what are some of the things that you do to break that down?
We do so many different variations of shell defense. You know, we just break it apart in so many different parts. We do help the helper. We're baseline dribble, and you've got to help and then recover and just get back and your defense to practice your defensive rotations, because there's going to be a breakdown always, you know. So you practice your defensive rotations. Practice just shell interchange, we call it, where your guards, your wings are just down screening, and you've got to get under that screen. We most of the time we're get under the screen, so they're not curling on us. I think it's just something you just got to work on almost every day, and just keep pushing into the kids of great closeouts, because like I said, we work on it all the time. There's still breakdowns. It's never going to look perfect. So just the more you can perfect it and square closeout. And that's one is like, when you do have it, one that I always see with kids too is the angle, right? So say you're guarding a guy in the corner, and you've got to help at least jab step up just to help just a little bit. On a dribble drive from the wing, just so he knows you're there, and he kicks it back to the guy in the corner, and your angle of closeout there is so important to get downhill in the right direction, so you're square, that you're not giving him baseline, and you're not giving him that dribble drive, but also that your closeout, you've got that hand up, and it's affecting your shooter. I always talk with our guys so much about how important we some teams are high hands, both hands. We're a one hand closeout. You got to have a one hand up. And I talk to our shooters the most about it. It's like, tell me right now, like I'll just line them up on the 3-point line, and I'll say, I'm this far away from you, put my hand right here. And I'm, you know, it's still two and a half feet away from him, you know, eyeball high. I was like, tell me that's not affecting you as a shooter. Right. Mm-hmm. You got to have the hand high. You got to have it. And it's just your angle of approach. Having square feet, we call it a lead foot. You don't want to have a closeout where you give a lead foot. What's the defender like, or excuse me, a good dribble drive player, good guard. They see you have a kind of a lazy closeout with your right foot forward. He's going to attack that foot, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to step that foot downhill. It's right. I mean, that's what good players do. They see, they just read it. It's automatic. Your closeout. So having good feet on good square feet on closeouts. So I mean, we try and just be relentless on that stuff. And I mean, I'm sure we haven't perfected the craft because we haven't played the perfect game yet. So if you ever figure that out, let me know.
There's a reason why I'm sitting in the Pen and a Napkin studios and you're still coaching. So, you know, don't come to me, man. Don't come to me. So let's wrap up on this. Let me give you the option. Austin, you want to talk about scouting or do you want to talk about how you use your assistant coaches in your program? I'll give you the choice.
Oh, man. Talk coaches a little bit. That'd be good. Just give me a chance on that. And we use the assistant coaches for scouting a little bit too. So there you go. It's 2-in-1 deal for you.
There we go. Hey. I'm a financially embarrassed social studies teacher. I can take all the 2-for-1s I can get. So go ahead. Yeah. So yeah, let's go. Let it rip.
Our staff, we've got 4 paid coaches, the head coach and 3 assistants. I've got a Chundil Hayes, is my head assistant for the varsity team. I mean, he helps all over the place, but his main role is a varsity assistant. Scott Anderson has been our JV coach for the last few years. Gabe Dorsey is our freshman coach. All our coaches, and I've never made it mandatory to them in any way because those freshman coaches, our freshman schedule's all over the place. They play 15, 16 games on weeknights all over. So I've never made it mandatory for like those guys to travel to every varsity game if they don't want to, you know. But they always do, you know, that we got a good crew. We've got guys that just want to be there for all of it. And so that's a positive. And our coaches, I would say, I hate sounding like it's, I don't know, like it's not that organized, but it's really not that organized. We all share duties, you know. I don't hand them lists at the start of the year. It's like, here's your job. We just kind of work it out as it progresses, you know. Like Scott was always my guy. He's putting the guy games on max preps after the game, where he's turning it into huddle for stats. Coach D is a great basketball mind and helps me a lot with scouting. He's always on to the next games and getting multiple games lined up for us to keep scouted, which all of them are, have been helpful with that. You know, when you're trying to prepare for a district final and you don't know who you're going to play, but you've got it down to 3 or 4 teams. We've got all of our coaches watching, multiple games of several different teams that it could be. And it's been that way for the last 3-4 years in a row. It could have been like 4 different teams that we ended up playing in the district final right there at the end of the year. So, those guys have been super helpful in that aspect as well. And other than that, we've kind of made it where we keep our numbers at a place where we can still all practice together. Mm-hmm. Where our freshmen are not practicing, they're not practicing away from the rest of the team. They're with the team in the gym. So we might have 30 in the gym at a time, but we make it work and we're all there kind of in it together and everybody's helping coach everybody, you know. Mm-hmm. And there've been days like that where, I'll put Coach D and he'll have the varsity for something and I'll go help out with the JV side a little bit on anything or just so they hear a different voice or because I think the JV or freshman need help with something specifically, you know, and whatnot. So, that's kind of how we roll, just a good group. And like I said, I got a good group of guys and I've always been blessed everywhere I've been. I've had good coaches, good assistant coaches that want to be involved and, just always really appreciated each other by the end of seasons and after we've worked together for a while. So, that's kind of how the duties are divided anyway.
Yeah.
And, makes it rank good. So
is it nice for you to kind of take 5 to 15 minutes and work with the JVs kind of like a little refresher for you where you're not worried about how's this going to affect if we win or lose Friday or night. It's just I'm just teaching basketball for 15 minutes here without kind of thinking about that a little bit. Is that kind of refreshing for you, Coach?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's good for them too. I mean, the young kids having their head coach come down there up to the other end or whatever we're doing, you know, and because we're usually kind of split up a little bit still when you get into more specific stuff, but having their head coach come down there and you can get in drills with your assistant coaches and get a little more detailed, help them get a little more detailed with some drills or different things. And that's half of what coaching is, you know, and coaching coaches and things like that too. Like where do we all get all this stuff we say and all the knowledge we know? We listen to some coach say it in some gym, right? And we heard it through players and other coaches and everything like that. So the more that you're around it, those kids and even your assistant coaches, you're hoping they pick up from you and you can pick things up from them as well when you're down there helping them out. So it's great. I mean, and just seeing the development I see, there's times, heck, I coach my son's fifth grade team, and there's times I'm having as good a time coaching his fifth grade team as varsity. Yeah. Varsity basketball, you know, it's just seeing kids improve and they love it and they want to go out there and give it hell and go again. And it's just as rewarding. That's probably when you know you're a coach, is your whatever level you're coaching, you find something rewarding out of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. And it's a great way to end it, talking about your son's fifth grade team. That's poetic right there, Coach. So Austin Lewis, head boys basketball coach, Sydney, Nebraska. Coach, if folks want to know more about your program, how can they find out?
Well, we've got a great, you know, honestly, the most easy way to see anything with Sydney Public Schools is probably on our Sydney social media pages on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. We do a great job of just showcasing our kids all around, not just basketball, but everything we do. It's probably one of the best things we do in our school is just trying to showcase our kids all the time. So that's a way to find something out, I guess, if you're wondering anything about Sydney. So mm-hmm. If you want to talk basketball stuff, you're probably going to get a hold of me, either myself or Coach Shaw. Yeah. And we're always open for basketball conversations, so that's no problem there either.
Absolutely. So, Coach, it's been a great conversation. Hope you've enjoyed being on the podcast.
I have. It's been great. You know, I was a little worried because I didn't know if I could. Yak that long for however long it's been, 45 minutes or whatever, but it went okay. And it was a nice, easy conversation. So I appreciate you.
Oh, no, thank you, man. I appreciate you. And just keep everything under control out there in the panhandle it's just great stuff. Keep things rolling out there and keep doing great things with the kids. That's the most important thing that you can do. So, hold the line here a second, Coach. We're going to wrap up here again. Austin Lewis, head boys basketball coach, athletic director out at Sydney High School here in Nebraska. Want to thank him. Want to thank COSAC Chiropractic, our founding sponsor. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review, subscribe to the podcast here. That would be great, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, all that fun stuff. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. It has been a privilege and a pleasure to have on Austin Lewis here this week on the interview series here, number 271. And it's just been really, really good. A lot of great stuff. By the time you folks hear this, the coaches, clinic will be right around the corner. So you can hear this on Thursday. Call me, email me, send a telegraph, whatever you want to do to get signed up for the clinic. Carrier pigeon is accepted. We'll figure something out here. So coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.